Welcome to Manager Tools. How to scan a resume, part two. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. How do I scan a resume? What do I look for in a resume? How do I decide whom to phone interview? If you want to answer these questions and more, keep listening.
The most important thing a manager does for his or her company is effective hiring. Effective hiring makes managing that much easier. And most managers don't know how to hire. They don't know how to structure an interview. They don't know how to ask questions. And they don't know how to listen and take notes and make a determination. At our Effective Interviewer Conference, we'll teach you how to structure your day, how to structure each interview, how to structure questions, how to ask the questions, how to listen to answers, how to take notes, and how to follow up to make sure you're making the right call. All in Manager Tool style, which is to say practice, 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 practice. Please come see us at the website and look up the Effective Interviewer Conference. Come to a city in the United States and Europe soon.
Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning.
Today, we're going to continue our conversation about scanning a resume. So we had a pretty extensive outline, which it's gone longer than I thought it would. And I'm sure it's going to still go longer. There's a lot of good information here. But we talked last week, we talked about titles, what to look for in job titles. And we talked about looking at dates, right? Mm-hmm. We still have left to talk about companies, what to look for there, what to look for in terms of career progression, responsibilities, accomplishments, education, accuracy, density, and then how to decide to screen further once you've looked through the resume. So we have ways to go. So today we're going to talk about companies and career progression.
We are.
To me, this is a real interesting section because I don't think a lot of managers, when they're looking at resumes, are really thinking about the companies in a you know, top of mind kind of way. I think in the back of one's head, and I'm thinking about my past experience, I know there's more value in experience with company X, say a Microsoft versus some other company or Google, for example, versus some company I've never heard of before, right? But mm-hmm. I think I just intuited that. I didn't really think about it. And I think there's some good points to think about here in terms of how to think about the company somebody's worked for and evaluate that in the context of looking at a resume.
Yeah, and depending on what you're looking for, Microsoft experience might not be the right thing because it's really different the way Microsoft might do something to the way, for instance, we do things here because there's so few of us and we have such different products and so on.
And I think one of the differences of companies that we're going to get to is the size of the company makes a difference. A role or a title at a small company can be very, very different than the similar role or title at a larger company. For example, smaller companies happen to have more responsibilities beyond just the title they have. Somebody's got to go pick up the mail, right?
I mean, you might, exactly.
At Microsoft, I'm sure they have a mail room. Manager tools, we certainly don't have mail staff, right?
No,
but somebody's got to go do that. And that's probably not the person's primary responsibility. So smaller companies, the jobs tend to be broader and encompass more than what you might think.
Exactly. So the problem is that if you're looking at a resume and you only look at the job titles, the same job title at two different companies could be completely different. And it depends on the quality of the company, the size, the industry, the stability, how fast it's growing. There's all sorts of things that play into what a job title means on the ground and what the candidate was actually responsible for, whether it was bigger tasks or smaller tasks, whether the quality standards were high or low, if they work with really good people, effective people, or really hard to work with people or ineffective people, what kind of systems they use, whether that's like yours or unlike yours. All of that plays into how effective somebody's going to be when they work for you. And you can't really tell that just from the job title. You have to be able to look at the company as well.
Yeah, I think it's true. I alluded to it earlier, right? You know, some companies provide notably better experience than other companies. I mean, I think it's generally accepted industry-wide. You tell me if I'm incorrect, Wendy, but experience with the best companies, right, is probably two or three times better than most other companies, right? If you're talking about getting people from the cream of the crop.
Yeah, at least. And of course, like, then you've got to ask yourself the question, so which companies are better?
Yeah, and why, and how do we figure that out? And unfortunately, there's really no easy answer, but you have some general guidelines that you're going to walk us through.
Mm-hmm. The first thing to do is to find out who they worked for. If it's a company that you don't know, that you don't know the name of, then you don't need to assume that you can't find anything out about them, because internet and Google, there's so many sources of company information that there's no reason not to even, not to try and look. And if there's a candidate who's in your maybe pile or in your yes pile, but you don't know about the company that they've worked for, then you absolutely want to look for that, for information about that company before you decide whether or not you're going to phone screen them and or interview them.
Well, you made a good point, right? You just talked about if the candidate is in your maybe pile. So, right, we've taken resumes and we have a yes pile, a maybe pile, and a no pile. And the no pile is much larger than the other two combined, right? If you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, hey, look at the companies in the yes pile and the maybe pile, but not in the no pile. So just a reminder, we're not going to look at the companies trying to find a reason to take somebody to the next step in the process. Remember, during this stage of the process, we're finding answers to say no. And so if they're in the no pile, that means you've already found a reason to say no.
Yeah, you don't go back and look for them. Oh, look, here's a reason to say yes. No, no. Once you're in the no pile, you're in the no pile.
That's right. And it doesn't matter how many reasons to say yes there are. You found the reason to say no. So don't go looking at companies trying to justify bringing somebody from the no pile back to the maybe or the yes pile.
And because the publicly known companies or the publicly traded companies, you have general knowledge. If somebody's worked for Apple, you probably know something about Apple, for example. And all of those public companies, there's tons of information out there, because when companies are being traded, there's information they have to issue. There's people talking about whether or not you should buy or sell. There's people, you know, they tend to be changes in the company or new products and stuff tends to be reported. And so there's lots and lots of information about those people. But if it's smaller companies or companies which are private, then it may be harder to find that information, but often there's a lot more information out there than you think there is.
Well, and a lot of times you find yourself in a position of interviewing candidates who have come from one of your competitors. So if on their, you know, say, for example, you're hiring somebody from the same industry into your job in the same industry, right? That, you know, there's potential that they've worked for one of your competitors. So if they have, then you probably know a lot or some about your competitors. Now, if you don't, by the way, if you don't know anything about your competitors, then that's probably a problem and you ought to, and there are things that you need to do, but that's a different cast. So we won't go down that path here.
The admonishment stands, but not right now.
Now, tell me about the difference in why it's important to consider companies who are in the broad category of they're either growing or they're not growing, and how that relates to this process.
In general, experience in companies that are growing is better than experience in companies that are standing still, in part because growth means success, generally. And that means for the employees that they are having to take on more responsibility. One, they're part of the reason for the success, in some small part at least. And two, there's more responsibilities in the role. You know, as a company grows, you don't add people at the top, you add people at the bottom. And so the people that were in the middle go up in the kind of pyramid. And so those people are having to grow, they're learning new skills, they're developing other people. You know, there's all sorts of skills that people are acquiring just because the company is growing and they're growing with it.
When we say growth, we just don't mean the number of people. On the contrary, I think you're right, Wendy, when the most successful companies, or a lot of them, hire folks at the bottom, right? But the even more successful companies, they don't hire people when they grow, right? What they do is they ask their people to improve. They improve their processes. They improve the productivity of their people. They get more out of the people they have. So when we talk about growth, we're talking about revenue, right? We're talking about revenue or profit. That's the kind of growth we're talking about. And those that grow in revenue and grow in profit and don't hire a whole lot more people, if any, those are the ones that we really are interested in, because those people are being asked to do more. They're growing. They're becoming more skilled at what they do, or they're doing what they used to do in half the level of effort. That's the kind of growth we're interested in. I mean, if you had to pick somebody, wouldn't you want to pick somebody who's been forced through that sieve, if you will, to get better at what they're doing? So some companies are growing rapidly and maintaining relatively the same size. There's an indication there that the people are growing as well.
Yeah, and that they'll probably want to do the same at your company. I was reading something at the weekend that there's a group of people who are like employee 10 to 50 in Facebook and Google and all those companies that have grown really quickly, who just move around startups that are in that stage because they're completely addicted to the hyper growth. So if they're coming to work for you, they're probably going to make your company do that too.
Yeah. And if your company is not growing, and hopefully your company is growing, right? But if you're going to hire somebody who is addicted to that kind of growth, to that kind of productivity improvements and pace of change, and your company is not that, or you're not trying to get there, then again, there's a disconnect between the expectation of the person you're interviewing and your company. And that's worth thinking about too when you're looking at resumes. Now, go back to growth for just a second. If you're interviewing somebody and the companies they've been in are not growing, or the last job they were in a company where it wasn't growing, or the company was even shrinking, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad reason. That's not necessarily a reason for saying no to a person. A matter of fact, there's a cast for that, right? Downturn rite of passage, I believe is what it's called. Working at one or two companies for a stint while you go through a recession or a downturn is not a problem and can actually be a really good experience. Because again, if the company's shrinking, there's still work that needs to be get done. And sometimes there's a lot of growth in people's responsibilities, even while downsizing. So we're not suggesting at all that you'd limit your list of folks to only those that are consistently in a growing company.
No, it's just worth considering their experience in the light of what their company was doing, therefore what kind of experience they might have got and how relevant that is to what you need.
Yeah, I guess another thing, growth occurs to me that there's a big difference between growth at a small company and growth at a large company. You know, growth of 10 or 20% in a small company is absolutely possible. And matter of fact, if you're probably not growing that fast, you're really not growing as far as a small company goes. But if you're Walmart and you're saying, well, they're not growing because they didn't have 20% growth, that's hard to do. Walmart, given their size, they're not going to go 10 or 20%. And the only way they're going to do that is if they acquire another company, right? So there is a difference between growth at large companies like Walmart and smaller firms. It's a lot harder to add revenues to a Fortune 50 company than it is to a smaller company.
Yeah, which is why we're not saying that the company has to have growth of 30%, right? Because it's different. It depends where they're coming from. And 30% may not be realistic, or it may be too low.
Yeah.
It's just another piece of information that you add to the mix.
Right. So gross. But, you know, to go back to, you know, like small company, if they're flat, right, if their revenues and profits are flat, that's worthy of some concern. Not necessarily a no, but a no-growth small company experience often means that there's all kinds of inefficient, internally focused behaviors that they're going to end up bringing to you. They're going to bring how they operate. They're going to bring that to your company. So if you're looking to grow and you're talking to people who spent most of their time at small companies with limited growth, it's worthy of some concern.
And we should define what small companies and big companies are, at least roughly, so that people know. So roughly, a small company is under 100, and roughly a big company is over 500, and 100 to 500 is kind of in the middle. And even a company that doesn't think it's small at 100 because it's got 100 employees, and maybe the people there remember when there were 10, and so now they think that they feel like they're big because they only know the names of some of the people rather than being really close to all the people that they work for or work with. under 100 still has a lot of similar characteristics and tendencies with small companies. And there's a kind of breaking point at 100 where you start to have to change things to deal with that many people. And so then things change at 100. And then between 100 and 500, they kind of stay roughly the same. And similar companies will have similar systems and so on. And then at 500, that's when there's another breaking point. And you really start to have to think about big company characteristics like having a legal team and an HR team and having policies. And
that's right. And the distance between the person at the top, her, and the folks at the bottom becomes much wider. And the fact is, CEO, she probably doesn't know everybody in the organization, that's for sure. And so then it starts to take on the characters of a large company that's 1,000 or 10,000 or 20,000. So yeah, I think that's pretty good guidance. 100 or less small company, 100 to 500 the immediate would be kind of, we classify as a medium size, and then over 500, just think about them as big.
Yeah. If you can get all the people in one room, it's definitely small, even if that room is an aircraft hangar.
I talked about earlier about, you know, different growth companies and non-growth companies. So don't assume that if you're not growing, you want to hire somebody from someplace that isn't growing, right? Mm-hmm. I think the assumption is that we want to grow, we want to get better, et cetera. So all things being equal, you want somebody from an organization that is growing, right? That brings that stuff to you. Now, let's go back to big and small companies. If you're asking someone to make a move from a big company to a small company, or from a small company to a big company, and they only have experience in one size, that's a red flag. Again, it's not necessarily a reason to rule somebody out, but it is a reason to ask about the change. If somebody's coming from a small company and coming to a big company, or vice versa, you may not say no, you may bring them in, but in the next steps, you ought to be asking questions about around the move from, say, a big company to a small company, around the responsibilities and the need for change and growth. And are you going to get upset if, you know, you're asked to take on additional responsibilities? Because the fact we're in a small company, people need to do that.
Yeah, it's a very different experience working for a big company than a small one. I always said I wanted to work for big companies because then there was somebody to fix the photocopier and I didn't have to do it. But you have to be able to fit in with the process. You have to be able to leave the photocopier and allow it to be broken until, like, the service level agreement that somebody a million miles away from you has agreed, and the engineer comes and you have to let him fix it, all that stuff. Whereas in a small company, it's your job as much as anybody else's to fix things. And so you can fix it. And those two, in my experience, are really different experiences. And it's not to say that you can't go from a big one to a small one, or vice versa. I've gone both ways. But I think if somebody only had big company experience and they were coming to a small one, I'd really want to ask them, hey, do you understand what's going to be different? And have you thought about it? Do you understand what it's going to be? Have you thought about how you're going to deal with that? All those kind of things before you employ that person and discover they really are a big company person and they hate the fact that one of their jobs is helping clear up after an event or whatever.
Yeah, or like emptying the garbage, or mm-hmm. just one fright. There's not somebody the magic garbage can fairy doesn't show up at night and walk through all the offices and empty the garbage. And I've seen people rebel at that kind of stuff. What do you mean I have to take out my own garbage? Yeah, well, like, we don't have a janitorial staff that comes in and magically empties out your garbage can. We talk about, you know, going from small company to large company as something worthy of consideration. It gets worse if more than one characteristic changes. For example, let's see, somebody is coming from a large company in a different industry to your small company, right? In a different industry. That's really worthy of consideration. If two things are changing, right? Both the industry and the size of the company, you have different ways of working, different levels of responsibility, et cetera, because the difference is between small and large, but you also have differences in the industry. And that can be a real, real big challenge. So be very, very cautious if you have kind of two major changes like that.
Yeah, it's definitely something that you want to ask about in the interview. And the best people have thought about what differences that will bring to the way they work and what they do. And the worst people have, it's not even occurred to them that it might be a problem. So you want to ask things like what systems they used in their previous roles and what technology and what kind of interaction they had with clients and so on. The things that make a difference to people's ability to do their job or that job that you're asking for. Because if somebody's close and they're saying, oh yeah, I understand what it means to move from a big company to a small company, but they've never used any of the systems, they haven't used the technology, they haven't managed a budget, and you're about to give them a budget. There's too many things that are new, and that presages difficulties, if not catastrophe, I think.
Yeah, all these operational disconnects, right, cause difficulties in their effectiveness at the beginning of their relationship with you. And it's tough to get through. So make a note of that stuff on the resume, right, so that you can cover it when and if they get to the screen interview or come in for a face-to-face interview later.
Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely fine to ask those things because those things are going to impact their effectiveness in the job. So you don't always have to ask questions that are pointed about technical ability or pointed about scenarios that they're going to face in terms of customers or whatever it is their specific job is, but just how they're going to work in the company. That's also very valid and essential. If they're moving, like you said, between a big company and industries, you can almost guarantee there's going to be tension, and therefore you want to make sure that that person is understanding enough that they're going to do things that mitigate that tension.
Good. So we talk about companies. So let's talk about career progression. What do we look for when we're looking at resumes, scanning resumes, in terms of career progression?
So the first question is, have they grown? And you would hope that an employee has started somewhere and become better or become more senior or taken on more responsibilities. But there is a bunch of different ways in which people can grow, and they're not all about job titles.
Right. I think that's the first mistake, right, that hiring managers often make is, oh, well, if the person wasn't a developer and then a team lead and then a manager and then a senior, I mean, there's lack of growth there. And that's not true at all. And if somebody wants to be an individual contributor in a technical role, there's all sorts of ways they can grow besides changing job titles, right?
Yeah, exactly. So somebody might have been in similar job titles for a long time, maybe like 10 or 15 years, and all of their job titles have developer in them, for example. But as a developer, you can look for, if you look at the responsibilities, you can look for changes in the role, more responsibilities. So for instance, they might have only been responsible for typing code in the first couple of jobs, but then afterwards they're responsible for putting their code with other people's, or they're responsible for some of the QA work or some of the strategic work at the beginning about architecture. And all that still might be covered by the job title developer, but it shows that they've been growing.
This is why resumes are so important. And folks, just sometimes the resumes are just so bad. But if that's true, you can absolutely envision, I know you've seen this a million times, Wendy, two people who've had essentially the same experience, and one resume lays all that out, and it's very clear from the resume that although their job title has not changed in the last 10 years, there's been significant growth within that role. Where the other resume, the person has the same experience, and their resume does not reflect that. And it's sad. And folks, your job is not to try to figure out whether the person is really, really good, yet has written a very poor resume, versus, whether the resume is an accurate reflection of their experience and value to you. You don't play detective with resumes. If they don't put it down, it's a no.
Exactly. And so other things that you might look for, significant learning based on the industry or technical changes. If you can see that somebody has been on a bunch of projects and all of them have been the same technology in different industries or different technologies in the same industry, there's some growth there that has to happen in order for somebody to be effective. And you might even see somebody staying in the same role and not have any of that learning, but they've increased in their mastery of those of the skills. They've learned new skills in order to be more effective in that role. They might be teaching or mentoring others. They might be leading people in a small way. You know, they might not have manager in their title, but you know, it might say in their responsibilities responsible for the four people who are tasked with whatever. And so that's like another thing you need to look for. You need to be careful assuming that someone who does not have manager in their title is not a manager, because those two things don't necessarily go together. And if somebody doesn't have that kind of stuff on their resume, they probably don't have it. Like you said, you can't go investigate. If it's not on the resume, assume they don't have it, because 90% of the time you're right, and the other 10% people don't know how to write a resume. And that tells you something in itself.
Again, if you start doing that, that's just an indicator. It's like, try to find the little nugget that's not in the resume. It indicates what you're trying to do is you're trying to find reasons to say yes, right? And what you're doing, again, in this stage of the process is you're looking for reasons to say no. And it's very seldom that somebody does this kind of investigative work, and then that doesn't turn into making up reasons to say yes to a candidate. So it's indicative of a larger problem in terms of how you're approaching the interviewing process.
And then somebody who has been in the same role in similar sized companies, so they have the same job title and the responsibilities are more or less the same, and they've been moving between companies that are in roughly the same size, that usually means that they don't have any growth because they're roughly doing the same thing over that period of time. But there's also something to be said about loyalty and staying with companies at the point at which they should have grown. They've moved to somewhere else where they can go back into their comfort zone. And potentially also, there might be something to be said about relationships as well. It's like, if somebody only lasts 2 years at every company and then they move to another company and do exactly the same thing or very close to the same thing, there's something there about why are they moving? And often it's relationships. They just come to a point where they can't get anything done.
Right. So like if somebody's in the same role and growing in a small company and has been there for 10 years, right, the resume would show that there's growth there. The real challenge is, like you're saying, is somebody who is performing the same role, same responsibilities, moves every 2 years laterally, right, to the exact same position in another company. That's indicative of a problem. They're not growing, and most people are growing within a company. They make a move, not just laterally, they move up in terms of responsibilities, right? And the lack of that growth, the lack of that vertical growth is a concern to you.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Okay, so one more in terms of growth is a kind of warning, I guess. Don't hire someone into a managerial role if they've never been a manager before. And again, it doesn't mean that you never do that, but it's a good rule to be almost certain that you're never going to do that. Because if somebody has never managed before, having them come into your team and meet a bunch of new people that they don't have any relationships with, and then try to manage them and learn to be a manager at the same time, is just too hard for most people.
It's not like a manager is better than an individual contributor, right? I'm not saying that at all. The difference is, or I guess the key point here is that the skills and knowledge and behavior as a manager is much, much different than as an individual contributor. And often that is a significant growth period in somebody's career. When you go from an individual contributor to a manager, there's a whole bunch of learning that happens because you have to behave differently. You have to exhibit different skills, better communications. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff in there, right? And if you're asking somebody now that you're asking them to move from another company to your company, learn all the systems and processes and go through that challenge and learn to be a manager at the same time, that's a huge, huge task.
Yeah, it's kind of like that two characteristics thing again. If they're moving companies and they're trying to learn to be a manager, that's two things. And for most people, two different things is too hard.
Yeah, and a lot of folks who want to be managers get frustrated because they're looking for a manager or management role in some other company because they haven't got it in their existing company, and so they want to move into a management role in another company, and they find that difficult. And this is one of the reasons is hiring managers are aware of that, and it's much harder to get hired externally as a manager if you've never been one before. Now, that said, we're not saying, you know, for example, if you're a manager in a company and you're asked to move over, you're interviewing for a director role somewhere else, that is not a significant a challenge, right? You may have never been a director before, had that level of management responsibility, but you have management experience, right? And that can scale. So it's not uncommon at all for companies to hire, for example, a director, a manager of managers from outside the firm, and that person's never been a manager or manager, but they've certainly been a manager, right?
Yeah, and there's a difference. Directors almost only have one job, whereas managers often need to know the nitty-gritty of what people are doing. So if you're managing developers, for example, you actually have to know what they're writing and how it works and how the code works and, you know, some really detailed stuff about the way the project's being put together. And you also have to manage them. As a director, you usually are not that deep into the details. You're just managing. And so it's easier to go from manager to director and across companies, because in one sense, you're actually dropping skills. And so you have the extra capacity to make that change between manager and director.
Yeah. And now every manager who's listening to this is going like, oh, so I'm more valuable than my director, and the director is getting way overpaid. I should have her job or something. So good job. So sorry.
I'm just upset like a bunch of people.
Cool. Let's stop here and we'll finish this up next time. But you know, looking at career progression and companies in particular, I think are things that often people don't pay enough attention to when they're looking at resumes. And so everybody who thought looking at resumes is real simple, it's not. There's stuff to consider if you want to do it well.
Yeah, that stuff about companies, you could ignore it, but actually if you look at it, it tells you way more than you expect. And so it would be a real shame to miss that stuff out or not to look at it and really think about it and miss a whole bunch of information about the person that you're thinking about hiring.
That's right. Excellent. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. So long. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.